Thank you, Sean. And our next proposition on integrating large institutions into fine-grained urban neighbourhoods, particularly regards to Columbia University, is Marilyn Taylor, who's going to speak, who's the chairman of SOM Architects.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I'm going to talk today about something that's certainly not unique to Columbia, certainly not unique to New York. I've been trying to figure out how to position it in relationship to the wonderful conversation going on here. And I am certain that it's also not unique to elite institutions and certainly not unique to the United States. But like the Williamsburg Greenpoint presentation that Sean just gave us, it is a great, I think, case study, a great focus in on an opportunity to look at the simultaneous problems of excitement and challenges in the kind of large-scale initiatives that are currently being undertaken here in New York. First of all, I do want to say my commendations to the mayor, Amanda, and Sean for being an administration that is willing to take on these problems and to have a view that planning and design embedded in planning are still things that can have a positive effect on the directions the city is taking, the way the city is going. That is not something that had actually held sway in any administration for all the time that I've lived in the city. And it's very refreshing that the level of conversation, discussion, and action is rising to the level that it is. What's different for Columbia, though, you notice it wasn't on the dot, the map of Amanda's dots, is that this is a private initiative. It is Columbia University in the city of New York, but it's private. It is a private actor moving forward. And that raises many questions in an even more explicit and sometimes contested form, such as whose land is it? Whose use is it? Who pays the costs? Who gets the benefits? How do those benefits get distributed? And these are things that are being discussed as we move forward here. Our team is a very broad range of people from Columbia University, extraordinary intellectual assets that are coming to bear on this. And within that huge team, the Renzo Piano Building Workshop and I have come together. And what I'm going to talk about today is primarily the design aspects, the urban design aspects of what we're doing in Manhattanville with Columbia. You will certainly see the brilliant hand of Renzo in this presentation. One more caveat before starting. We are very early in this process. Things I'm going to show you are primarily things that are in the public eye. Much is yet to be determined. And as I speak, I will, I think, as I said, focus on design, but try to make you simultaneously aware of the contradiction between the possibilities of design and the limits of design, yet at the same time believing strongly that we need to move forward and bring design to bear. So here are a series of the issues, particularly as they relate to subjects you're discussing here, that Columbia's proposal to extend its reach into Manhattanville in West Harlem is putting on the table. What is the role that urban institutions will play in great world cities? I personally believe it is a very strong one. As we reach for new economies, as we try to figure out how intelligence, brain power, interdisciplinary interaction, creativity, and all those sort of things play out into the economy, universities and other institutions like Columbia are absolutely essential. What forms will they take? How does that facilitate engagement across disciplines, across networks, and not just across physical boundaries? How are public goals brought to bear in an action that's essentially an initiation of a private institution? Can privately provided space be public, seem public, fulfill larger objectives? And in fact, is this possible? I mean, this is something that Columbia is undertaking now for 3 to 5 decades. How much can we know now? What can we do now to set a future? So, focusing in on that wonderful skinny neck of northern Manhattan, which has in fact historically been the home to an enormous number of institutions at all levels, whether social, educational, healthcare, and in particular the ones we're dealing with. The center circle there, labeled Manhattanville, is the area of focus for the design work that we're doing. And not surprisingly, it's of interest to Columbia because 5 minutes to the south is the circle of Morningside Heights. And 10 minutes, or as the dean of the School of Physicians and Surgeons would say, 10 minutes but 6 hours to the north is Washington Heights. Immediately to the east, in the grayer circle, is City College. And this kind of cross-Manhattan connection and the notion that there is a community of facilities up here, a community of intellectual communities up here, is something that has not really been focused on. Here's the site. And interestingly enough, we tend to think of Upper Manhattan, particularly as we go into Harlem and up all the way to Spuyten Duyvil, as a place of regular blocks where that wonderful grid of the city it comes to bear. In fact, in Manhattanville, that's not the case at all. Our site, which is the white area, and the larger outline is of a larger rezoning area that's contemplated, sits, in fact, amid a bunch of mid-20th century super blocks. Manhattanville houses, General Grant houses, Morningside Gardens, Columbia's own housing to the south. This is a view from over the Hudson River looking to the south. So actually the proposition here, and this is one that's already received a lot of argument and contention, is in fact this is a major mixed-use neighborhood within the city, 35 acres of which will be rezoned from the present manufacturing use to a mixed zone that will allow manufacturing uses to continue, but new community facility uses to be added. And it will legitimize Fairway and some other activities that occur along the waterfront as well. And within that 35 acres, approximately half the area you see in white will be primarily for Columbia University uses. Just a quick bit of history. Manhattanville, as a term, is not geographically specific, but rather relates to a community that was founded very early. Originally, both Tories and Patriots lived here in peace and harmony. They lived in this valley, which is the one place where the headlands of Upper Manhattan break and allow the land to come directly to the river. They lived here together well. They lived in the valley. They farmed the hillsides. But this, because of the presence of water, because of the special condition of topography here, this became an area of industry. That led to, in the early 20th century, two spectacular transportation improvements. The upper one, the IRT subway came along Broadway because of the valley. It had to come out of the ground, rise through the air for 10 blocks, and then go back into the ground again, a tremendous engineering feat spanning the valley. More beautifully, at the same time, the Riverside Drive Viaduct was created to connect the two Olmstedian landscapes to the south and the north. And so for people who don't know where Manhattanville is or where our site is, we often say it's the area between the viaducts. They are a tremendous legacy that exists today. On the lower right here, one of the most spectacular potential spaces of the city as a creation of its industrial past and looking for its future. But as I said, it was also an industrial place. Below, this is the Teeman factory. They did dyes and all kinds of nasty things. Above, a little bit later, the milk producers and pasteurizers and distributors came in. The automobiles soon followed the carriage trade and gave us, again, a legacy of the Studebaker building, the Sheffield Farms building, where milk was pasteurized, behind big windows so the public could see how clean that process was and how safe the milk was, and then still another automotive assembly building, the Nash building, which sits on Broadway. These are a part of the legacy that will be accommodated in the future plan. But what else do we have? Well, as I said, we have super blocks. We have underutilized streets. We have great views to the river. We have, both looking along 125th Street to the lower left and along 130th Street, Streetscapes where uses that cannot find a place anywhere else have tended to go, having a lot to do with the care of the automobile, less with the care of people. We do have 900 jobs here, of which most are public. Most of the private sector jobs have long since abandoned, and we have about 140 residents who will need, in cooperation with Sean, to find other homes over time as Columbia's objectives are realized. This is the kind of transformation we're talking about. From a city street that functions mostly as a highway with fast food places along it, with a lack of direction, with essentially no inhabitable public domain, to a public street with a school of the arts and a strong connection to the river and a very lively public environment. So here's Columbia's vision. I'm just going to describe some of the principles of it to you and give you a sense of the discussion that's underway. 125th Street is one of the great cross streets of Manhattan. At its western end, in the context of a mixed-use neighborhood, the blocks you see highlighted in yellow, over time, over at least three decades and possibly more, will increasingly become a home where Columbia can undertake its mixed-use, interdisciplinary, and perhaps more world-related and less ivory tower endeavors. Very specifically, the size of the blocks is suited to what you all know is a huge issue facing cities, which is how can the needs for the sciences be accommodated while doing it in the context that makes them friendly and contributing urban buildings rather than nasty machines. Several principles are emerging that will govern the plan. 125th Street and its intersection with Broadway, filling in the gaps, making a strong connection to the river where none is made now. People currently living in this vicinity get in their cars and drive to Fairway three blocks north because it is not a place where you can walk. And so when we think about the imposition of change, I think we also have to think that there is a broader sense of who benefits just than focusing on an elite university. Enhancing connectivity and views through cross streets. Every bit of public domain right now will remain public domain. No streets will be taken over. No super blocks will be created. This is a place where connectivity can help to begin to frame the form, both urbanistically and in architectural terms, of what will happen here. A network of open spaces will be created. An old-fashioned idea, perhaps, but an enrichment. Interestingly enough, there are opportunities to connect to the east to City College, and Manhattanville Houses really doesn't want to open itself up to those connections. So you see here a diagram that we are sort of potentially routing people around or finding other ways to get east and west, not a thing easily done in this part of town. But clearly connecting from community-driven open space, which is independently underway on the waterfront, and bringing that sense of connection through the communities. Encouraging that access and creating new uses to support it, contributing to the opportunities by ground floor uses, by increasing a sense of destination at the waterfront edge. Here's one version which together with could make a destination of this particular place within Harlem underneath that spectacular viaduct by day and by night. Continuing the active uses along 125th Street, same along Broadway and 12th Avenue, as I was just discussing. But what I want to talk a little bit about is how does one introduce density by designing in section in a way that can help make these projects, can help make these investments, the buildings that are added, really feel a part of a new urban form. And we have devised this as a response in section, which is most importantly begins at the level of the street with the mixed-use urban layer. It may be only one story, it may be five stories, but it is a highly transparent, highly porous zone that connects everything together from Broadway and its viaduct to 12th Avenue and its. Below grade is the factory. This is support services for the science. It's an energy center. It's coordination of those sustainable initiatives, but most of all, it's about freeing up the public realm. The university's program rises above and all at a height that stays within the upper limit of the Manhattanville houses to the east and yet provides a potential for whole new kinds of uses within the fabric. This is that urban layer on the north side of 125th Street. 3 to 5 floors of activities, highly visually accessible, highly physically accessible, opportunities potentially for neighborhood entrepreneurial investments here with the program of the university, whether it be science on the right, arts in the middle, or academic uses on the left, rising above. Building on the industrial history and the spectacular built qualities of the two viaducts to make an expression of architecture about factories for the 21st century but different from those that preceded it. So a primary expression of steel, a tertiary expression of steel, an engagement in a form different than that which we see today all around the city. And here it is in Renzo's proposed School of the Arts and a first science building and a long reach in the early phases to make that all-important connection to the river. So here are the existing conditions, a mix of uses as I've described. Here are the buildings that might occur in the first phase. Here's how they focus energy on 125th Street and try to transform that space for going for making it a place for people to be rather than a haunt of the automobile alone. And over future time, in volumes we cannot yet define, in uses we don't yet know, to continue to move toward the river north and as well to the west, with a mix of yellow residential areas, green science-serving areas, blue, more specifically academic areas, still to be determined in this particular area, in a plan that essentially reaches from Morningside House Heights to the south all the way up to the intermediate school and beyond. This provides an opportunity for the sciences to really reach and do everything they can, not only for the people who are leading the grants and leading the activities for the city, this is a view along Broadway, but also a great new river's edge, a different way for the city to meet the river with a lot of excitement and intensity beneath that viaduct that rides between the buildings and the river beyond. Just want to mention a moment the challenge of open space and how one addresses it here. There is a space at the heart of the campus, but it's not the space that presently exists wrapped by serious masonry buildings at Columbia. It is an open space. It's not designed for exclusion, not for formality, not for security, but it brings up great discussion of who can use the space, when, and for what purpose. And this will be a very fascinating part of the discussion that moves forward. Design at the scale of the street is all important in this attempt to create a place that is connected, that has undefined potential above, but firm commitment to the public realm. So here is the notions about Broadway, which will be embodied in zoning text for this area, and for 130th Street, looking from Broadway toward the Hudson River, in a view that someday may look something like this. So I'm going to close now. I certainly don't think that anyone can represent that the thinking about this university and its role in Manhattanville is almost all right yet, but I know that it is a start in the right direction. And I would suggest that there are three qualities that are enormously important. They are important both as a matter of process and even more important as design values. If we achieve transparency, porosity, and urbanity out of the ideas presented here, then I think this can be a truly important contribution in the urban age. Thank you very much.